This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Boston Police Commissioner William Evans has the authority to order 100 officers to wear body cameras. Suffolk Superior Court Judge Douglas Wilkins made that ruling today, rejecting an effort by the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association to stop the body cam pilot program. WBUR digital reporters Zininjor Enwemeka was at Suffolk Superior Court today, and she joins us now with more. Hi there, Zininjor.
Hi, Meghna.
So first of all, tell us more about what Judge Wilkins said about the patrolman union's argument and his ruling overall.
Yeah, so the patrolman's union made a couple arguments in court this week. They basically said that, you know, the city didn't give it enough time for a voluntary pilot program to work. And they also pointed to a study that was, I believe, based out of the UK, the RAND Corporation. But they pointed to this study that indicated that body cameras could actually harm officers, that they would make them more susceptible to people, you know, reacting negatively to them. Basically, the judge said today that he didn't buy the union's arguments, and he said that that research was inconclusive, and basically said that, the only way to really know how the body cameras will work in Boston is to do this pilot program in Boston.
Right. So rejecting the idea that police officers could be hurt if they wore the cameras. And I also noted that the judge said regarding the patrolman's argument that they weren't given enough time for the pilot program to put forth volunteers, that he said in a way that was a self-inflicted wound because nobody did volunteer when Commissioner Evans first asked.
Yes, exactly. I mean, basically, again, the judge here sided with the city in saying that the union could have done more to get volunteers and that there was time.
Okay, so let's go back a little bit because this whole controversy and conflict began when Boston Mayor Marty Walsh and Commissioner Evans reached a deal with the patrolman's union in July that some officers would wear body cameras for a 6-month trial on a voluntary basis. But again, no one volunteered until just yesterday?
Yeah, that's correct. So this wasn't part of the court proceedings this week. But yesterday, Commissioner Evans did announce that he had asked his command staff to volunteer to wear body cameras, and they basically agreed to do that. Again, that won't be officially part of the pilot program, but it is sort of a show that this police department is willing to embrace the technology.
Mm-hmm. So how are folks reacting to the judge's ruling today?
Well, many of the activists and community members who have been wanting this for a very long time basically are happy today. They say that this is a great step towards police accountability and transparency and a great day for civil rights in Boston. So here is Matthew Siegel. He's a legal director of the ACLU of Massachusetts.
The failure to have volunteers for this program was a self-inflicted wound. And really, this lawsuit was a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah, so there's Matthew Siegel again echoing what the judge said in his ruling about the failure of what they see as a failure of the police union to get volunteers to step up for this program.
Do we have any reaction from the police unions themselves?
Yes, the police union did issue a statement. They said they're disappointed with the judge's ruling, but they are looking forward to continuing to work with the police department as this pilot program gets underway.
So did they say anything about trying to seek another injunction of any kind?
Well, it's unclear if they will do anything before Monday, but I think we can expect possibly some more action moving forward. But right now they're focused on working with the city just to make sure that their officers are protected and that, they can advocate on their behalf.
Mm. And finally, so Monday is the key date then. Is that the day that the pilot program is scheduled to begin? And how do we know who may wear these body cameras and how they've been selected?
Yes. So Commissioner Evans said that the city is ready to go on Monday. There's 100 officers. They represent a diverse group of officers in terms of race, in terms of both men, women, and from all across the city.
Well, that's Anindya Enwemeka. She's WBUR's digital reporter. She's been covering the Boston Police Department's body camera pilot program. And since Anindya is our digital reporter, you can also find more of her reporting at WBUR.org. Anindya, thanks so much.
Thank you, Meghna.
All right. Well, that's some pretty big news. So let's turn now for more reaction from our Week in Review panel. Joining us this week is Renee Graham, Boston Globe columnist and WBUR contributor. Good to see you, Renee.
Hi, Meghna.
Also with us, Richard Tesei, former Republican minority leader of the Massachusetts State Senate. It's great to have you back, Richard.
Nice to be here.
All right, Richard, so let's start with you. What do you make of the ruling today and the fact that it looks like the body cam pilot program is moving forward?
Well, I think the whole question was really whether or not the commissioner, Commissioner Evans, had the authority to require officers to wear body cameras. And clearly the courts came out today and said that he did. And I do think that, you know, at a time when police in general have to be very careful and should be thinking about public relations and transparency, I do think that they erred, the Boston Police Union erred and made a mistake, and they come out of this not looking very good.
Renee?
You know, I agree with what Richard said. I mean, this is a really sort of crucial moment for police officers and police departments around the country. And I think the initial resistance didn't exactly inspire public confidence in the police department. I can't really fathom a scenario where the union thought the judge would rule in their favor, especially after the union president said that he essentially told officers not to volunteer. You know, so again, we're not talking about a good faith effort. And I think it's very important that the judge decides today that this has to go forward.
Well, in fact, I mean, it seems as if Judge Wilkins' ruling was explicitly clear on that. I mean, he was saying that even if a small number of officers across the entire Boston Police Department had volunteered, then, you know, this case would have never needed to have happened.
Exactly.
And clearly there was orchestrated by the union to prevent anybody from volunteering. And, you know, the whole idea that body cameras are harmful to people, whether it be the public or the officers themselves, you know, then while they might not be perfect, clearly this is the wave of the future. And clearly there are a number of different aspects that, including mostly transparency, but just cooling emotions in a lot of very sticky situations, emotional situations, to have the body camera. From what I understand, in you know, places that have been used, they have been very beneficial already. So,
yeah, not to mention, we're also living in a time when everybody has a camera on them. And a lot of the killings that we've witnessed, a lot of the instances we've seen, they've come from cameras held by civilians. So you would think that the Boston Police or any police department would want to have body cameras. So literally they have their say. The idea of resisting it is to resist transparency and accountability.
Mm. Well, I want to play a bit of tape from earlier this week. This is from Matthew Siegel, the legal director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts. The ACLU and other groups in Boston filed amicus briefs in this case that agreed in support of Boston Police Commissioner William Evans. And here is Matt Siegel and what he told WBUR on Wednesday.
The only thing that the union's lawyer said about the people of Boston was an insult. He said that body cameras, contrary to the evidence all over the country, body cameras in Boston could hurt police officers because in his view, in the view of the union's lawyer, the people of Boston who might be encountered on the street are not rational, maybe psychotic, maybe seeking to become famous.
So that's the ACLU's Matt Siegel. Richard, today, let me ask you about that, because he was basically referencing that RAND study that Zanindra was talking about that was brought up in court, that wearing body cams, the assertion is, might make police officers even less safe. I was surprised that they even brought this question into what was essentially a contract dispute, as the union tried to make it out to be. Your thoughts on that?
I think that there have been three other studies that have been undertaken around the country. This is still obviously in its infancy. But I think in San Diego, it showed that actually there were more arrests when police started using body cameras than prior. And certainly the results of this other study didn't come into it at all. I mean, they didn't have the same findings. So I think, again, it's a pilot program, and that's what you have to remember.
Right.
And, And at the end of the day, once there's some data and once, you know, we've had a chance to use them, I think you probably end up seeing that the officers in a lot of cases feel more comfortable with them because, you know, you're in a situation right now where obviously the police feel like they're under siege. And I think if you're doing your job as a police officer, you shouldn't have anything to worry about. And in more cases than not, the having the body camera, I think, is going to be helpful for the police.
Renee?
Let the public see what happens on the street. And the way that's going to happen is through body cameras. You know, there's, you know, up until the point when everyone had a cell phone camera, it was very much the police version and everyone else's version. And more often than not, the police version was what was going to be believed. Now you have the body camera. And I think that that can make a difference in the transactions that police have with civilians. I think it will also impact the way civilians interact with the police.
Right.
But in most cases, the way I see it, it would be to the benefit of both.
Well, what about this aspect of it? I mean, again, as Richard rightly points out, pilot program, right? But under the Boston policy, I think I'm seeing that officers can disable cameras when recording would be considered insensitive or inappropriate or in violation of privacy policies. It's up to their discretion. Should that, you know, if we're talking about transparency here, should that even be an option?
Well, that's going to make the whole pilot program instantly suspect for most people. We've seen a couple of instances in other cities where the body camera has malfunctioned or it's fallen off. And the minute that happens, and it always tends to happen at a very crucial moment, people immediately feel like, you know, the game is rigged. So I think if you have a situation where an officer can decide, well, I'm going to turn my body camera off, and there's some very important and vital piece of the scenario that's missing, that's not going to inspire public confidence at all. This has to be done. It has to be done in good faith. And the way to do that is not by turning the camera off arbitrarily.
Well, I want to play a little bit more tape here. This is from Boston Police Commissioner William Evans speaking to reporters on Wednesday, again, prior to today's ruling.
You know, we've delayed this program enough. I made a commitment to the community to be as transparent and as accountable as possible. And the officers have nothing to hide. I'm sure they're going to embrace this program once they get it going.
And as we mentioned a little earlier, yesterday, before the court's decision, the department announced that the police commissioner, the superintendent-in-chief, and seven other command staffers will wear body cameras during the entire six-month pilot program. So maybe putting themselves right there front and center in doing what they're asking other officers to do. But, Richard, let me ask you about the relationship between Commissioner Evans, the Boston Police Unions, and also let's bring in Mayor Marty Walsh into this. Do you think that this struggle, this conflict has damaged that relationship, or is this sort of part and parcel of tensions that have always existed between administration and you know, the rank and file who walk the beat? Yeah.
Well, you got to remember, this is a union issue at the end of the day, and you have a lot of union members who feel as though that the body cameras represent a change of condition of employment. And that should be subject to collective bargaining. And I think if you whittle away everything, that's the bottom line here. Because I think among a lot of the police, they don't necessarily have a problem with the body camera, but they think that they should probably be paid more, because it's, again, something new that they're being required to do. And that's why I said at the beginning, I think it all boils down to the fact as to whether or not the commissioner had the authority to require, and the judge clearly said the commissioner can tell the police what to wear, and I believe that's legally the way it was settled. I think this is the wave of the future.
Yeah.
It's a pilot, but I think this is the direction we're heading in, and we'll go from here.
Renee?
I understand the point of the union in this and where they stand, but the relationship between the police officers and the communities they serve is damaged. And if this helps mend that on some level, if this makes the police feel safer on the streets and it makes the civilians not fear the people who are supposed to be protecting and serving them, I just don't see how that could be a bad thing.
Well, we will see what happens come Monday when the pilot program officially gets underway and whether or not there will be any more challenges to it. But let's move on and talk local politics, because Labor Day made for an unusual Thursday primary here in Massachusetts. And since so many candidates were running unopposed, like what's new in this state, right? Turnout was somewhere around 8%, and of course the vast majority of those seeking re-election faced no primary opponents. But there's a couple things we want to talk about in this year's primary. Two Democratic state reps lost to progressive challengers. Cambridge Representative Tim Toomey served 12 terms, and he lost to progressive attorney Mike Connolly. And Lawrence's state rep, Marco Devers, lost to Juana Matias. Richard, let me start with you. Do you think this tells us anything about the state of the Democratic Party in Massachusetts? Are we starting to see pushes towards for more progressive candidates?
I think with the turnout being as low as it was,
I'm trying to find something here.
I have a hard time like reading like a lot into what happened, but I'm sure maybe in those races, yeah. But I consider both, both of those representatives to have been very liberal, so they probably, maybe it was that they weren't liberal enough. But, you know, in Somerville, you have Senator Jalen, who was one of the most liberal members of the Senate, easily holding off a primary from a Cambridge City Councilor. So it's kind of hard to put your finger on a trend all the way across. But I would say when you have low turnout, whether it's on the Democrat or the Republican side, party activists who are more to the left and more to the right are the ones who usually end up voting, and that's probably one of the reasons that led to their defeats.
So get out there and vote, even on a Thursday primary. I want to talk about the Jalen race in just a second, but Renee, let me get your thoughts on, I'm seeing here that Mike Connolly, actually had the support of Bernie Sanders' new group, Our Revolution, that's seeking to put more progressive candidates forward.
And he was endorsed by Noam Chomsky. So there you go.
Only in Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts. I mean, are we looking at the Bernieization of Democratic politics? Maybe too early to say. I mean, maybe it's not a trend, but it does make you kind of wonder. You know, Mike Connolly is a lawyer. He's a community organizer. He was a member of Occupy Boston. He ran against Tim Toomey 4 years ago and got crushed. And this time he won by 300 votes. Now, yes, it was not the biggest turnout, but something obviously changed.
Yeah.
And even though Toomey was considered rather liberal, the feeling was we could go further than that, and that's where Mike Connolly comes in. So I think his win, to me, was the most interesting development yesterday.
Huh, okay.
But then again, you see Steve Murphy, you know, who is sort of, would to me be an old-time Boston Paul, easily winning the Register of Deeds race here in Suffolk County. So, I mean, he was probably the most least liberal of all the candidates.
I keep coming back to the 300-vote margin. Point taken that it's interesting, but with a little asterisk, maybe. Right. But about that Pat Jalen race, Richard, as you reminded us, she won last night against her primary challenger, Cambridge City Councilor Leland Chung. And the thing that really got our attention about this race is that there was a lot of campaigning and politicking around the question of charter schools and how Jalen or Chung viewed charter schools. And in a sense, we were feeling that it was starting to become kind of their race was becoming a local proxy war because for the state Senate primary, Jalen, who is critical of charter schools, got more than $100,000 in funding from the Massachusetts Teachers Association, and Leland Chung, who's for lifting the charter cap, got $100,000 or almost $100,000 from Democrats for Education Reform, a pro-charter group. So I'm wondering, I mean, this charter school ballot question, which the whole state will have to think about come November, we were fascinated to see that there was, you know, for a local race, I mean, it's a state Senate race, but $200,000 flowing into a Democratic primary because of this question. And I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
I just think it's fascinating the way charter schools, the whole subject of charter schools has mushroomed this year. You know, it's always been sort of bubbling under the surface. And so, you know, once you evoke that in an election, it became this huge issue, and I think people paid a lot more attention to what was going on with that and who stood where because, you know, the ballot question, it's all there. People are talking a lot about, are charter schools a good thing? Should they lift the cap? You know, so I think it's very interesting how that played out in this particular election.
Well, we have a little bit of tape here from Pat Jalen. She spoke to WGBH at the end of last week, and here's what she said about all the money going into this Democratic primary race.
I found out last week that more money is going to be put into this campaign against me than either my opponent or I has spent. So I said to myself, who is my real opponent here? Who is sending out more leaflets than my opponent? who is spending more money than my opponent?
Richard, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, a proxy war usually works when people don't know either one of the candidates. But in Senator Jalen's case, she has been the senator there for a long time. I know she does a lot of good work with constituent services. People know her. She's staked out a lot of positions on issues. So I think, you know, she won 80-20.
Right,
she
won
a huge amount.
Yeah.
So I don't think, you know, and on the other side, though, here in Boston, you know, on Representative Fox's district, that was an open seat, and Shania Tyler won, who is a graduate of a charter school and a supporter of charter schools. Mm-hmm. So again, I don't think that you can, you know, draw too much of a conclusion on this primary, on how much of an impact pro and anti-charter school.
You know, Richard, I take your point, but I think I'm going to just disagree with you a little bit here, because what this telegraphs to me, and I mean, I can't know, I'm not in the brains of the money putting people putting the money into this race, but what this seems to telegraph to me is that both sides of the charter debate, regardless of how the people of Massachusetts vote in November, are already gearing up for a second round of fighting over it.
Well, yeah,
and then they're going to see that fight in the state legislature.
And the way I look at it is, you know, having served in the state Senate, the Massachusetts Teachers Association has been at this for years. They've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars over probably a 10 or 12 year period ensuring that people are elected to the state Senate who are opposed to charter schools. And clearly there's a majority right now in the state Senate opposed to charter schools, which is the reason why there's a ballot question on the ballot in the first place, because there wasn't any chance to get any type of legislation through. And even among the Democratic Party, you have a whole bunch of Democrats right now who are saying, hey, you know, we have to reform the schools, and they've set up Democrats for charter schools.
Well, and pro-charter groups, you know, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars just to even get that question onto the ballot as well. Renee?
I still do think it's a little bit of a preview of what we're going to see in November. You know, you could look at the race in a vacuum, but it was much bigger than that. And the issues that were coming into play was charter schools. So that's what people were really deciding on. Now, that's not to say that the die has been cast and we know what's going to happen in November, but I do think it does give us an idea of what to expect over the next few months.
All right, so we've got just enough time for our hubbubs, and that is the news or the story that you think maybe should have gotten a little more play but didn't this week and is worth a Friday mention here. And Richard, what's your hubbub?
Friday mention is probably for Saturday for me. I just want to let people know that on Saturday, the 15th annual Walk for Hope for ALS is going to be run by the Angel Fund in Wakefield, where I live, around Lake Quantipowhat. It's 3.5 miles around. It's from 9 to 12. All the people, this organization, the Angel Fund, is great. What they do is they basically raise awareness for ALS, but they also raise money for Dr. Robert Brown, who is one of the probably foremost experts on in working for a cure for ALS. Mm-hmm. And he's right here in Massachusetts at UMass, a medical center in Worcester. I've been out to his lab. The things that he is doing right now, they're really on the cutting edge and about to really make some huge strides research-wise to help cure or find a cure for ALS. So and I think it's really important if anybody's around the area or I want to go online and contribute to the Angel Fund, it's just a great organization.
And the walk's on Saturday.
Saturday. It starts at 10 o'clock.
Great. Renee?
And also tomorrow, in one of Boston's great neighborhoods, actually my favorite Boston neighborhood, JP, it's the 6th annual JP Music Festival featuring 15 bands and performers on 2 stages at gorgeous Jamaica Pond. It starts at noon, and all performers live or work in Jamaica Plain. Food trucks, great music, dancing. It's a perfect late summer gathering.
I'm thinking you could fit both in on the
exactly.
same day, right?
Get up early, fill your day up with both.
Well, my hubbub, I feel like my hubbubs are either one of two things, either complaints about the MBTA or animals. And so today I'm doing an animal-based hubbub because the Arnold Arboretum, owned by Harvard University, they're clearing a space for new plants because they want to obviously plant new varieties. And they're doing so with goats. They're having goats where they're going to enclose them for their safety and to control where the goats eat, to actually eat away weeds or unwanted vegetation. I mean, we all know goats are voracious eaters. And I love this idea. You can't get any more green or natural than that. And I just wondered if whether or not they're going to use what the goats leave behind as fertilizer for the new plants. So that's my hubbub for today. Renee Graham, Boston Globe columnist and a contributor here to WBUR. Have a great weekend. Thanks again.
You too. Thank you.
And Richard Tesei, former Republican minority leader in the Massachusetts State Senate. Same to you, Richard. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.